So I grew up mainly in the lower mainland in Delta, North Delta. You guys know where North Delta is? Yeah. So you grew up there. There you go. NDSS, North Delta Senior Secondary. Oh, you went to Seaquam. Oh, I'm sorry. just kidding, Jill. When I was 16, my parents received a call from a family who lived up north. And their daughter was in the hospital at that time, and she was getting discharged. And they were looking for a place that she could live for a year or two or whatever, a safe place for her to live, to recover. Just so happened when I was 16, like my sisters were older than me. They were moved out of the house, and so the house was a little bit more empty. And my parents said, yeah, for sure, she can come live with us. Now, the reason why she was getting discharged out of the hospital is that she was really struggling with a mental disease that we would call anorexia. You guys have probably heard of anorexia before. And she came and she was discharged out of the hospital. She came to live with us. I got to know her really well. She became like a sister to me. She came to youth group, got involved in the church, and eventually married one of my friends. If you don't know what anorexia is, it's an eating disorder characterized by abnormally low body weight. It's an intense fear of gaining weight and a distorted perception of weight. This is usually controlled by how much a person eats. At this point in time, when she was discharged out of the hospital, she was the worst case that British Columbia had ever seen and dealt with. I'm sure maybe things have changed since then. This is in the 90s, but she was the worst at that point in time. But she survived. You know, the doctors said because of how bad her anorexia is, they thought that she probably would never have children. But she did. She ended up having kids with my friend that she married. Anorexia is one type of eating disorder that we battle with here in the Western world. Did you know that in Canada, the estimates are that young people, that at least 5% of our young people battle with some sort of eating disorder? And so when you think about it, in this room, if there's 100, 150 people in this room, you know, you could maybe say that would represent like 7 people in this room that are battling with some sort of eating disorder. Anorexia is a disease that attacks the body. It's not a virus, it's not a bacteria, but it's a deception that hijacks the mind, programs your mind basically to destroy your own body. A common myth that I've read about anorexia is that when someone who's battling with this disease looks in a mirror, a myth is that they see a fat person. But I've been told that that is actually inaccurate. What they see when they look in the mirror is someone who would be better off if they were just a little bit thinner. Not quite there yet. I'm losing weight, but I would just be a little bit better off if I'm thinner. When it comes to people that struggle with eating disorders like anorexia, is that they've already achieved what they're struggling for, and they're really good at it. They're good at losing weight. The problem that they have is they don't know when to stop. And that's like a lot of things in life, right? We can be good at many things, or maybe there's something we enjoy, but we just don't know when to stop. So there's lots of things in life that we can struggle with in that way. I've read that anorexia really popped up on the scene in the Western world with the Industrial Revolution. Before the Industrial Revolution, a couple hundred years ago, food was something that was essential for us to survive. You ate, you looked for food, you produced food, you grew food, you hunted, because you needed to survive. Now food has become something since the Industrial Revolution that we struggle with. We struggle in ways when it comes to overeating. We struggle about being overweight. We struggle with worrying about what I'm eating, is it healthy or not? Is there chemicals in it? We struggle with all sorts of stuff, right? But before the Industrial Revolution, food wasn't seen that way. This is something that was needed to survive. The Industrial Revolution also brought something else along with it that's connected to how we see food, and that is wealth. We see money and wealth very differently. The richer a person gets, your priorities shift from what you need to what you want. When our basic needs are met, our appetites continue to grow. That's the thing with wealth, is that as our basic needs are just met, we have food, we have clothing, we have shelter, our appetites don't stop, they just continue. We don't know how to stop our appetites. So our culture is not just unhealthy in regards to how we view food, we've also become unhealthy with how we view money. We don't know how much is enough. When we look in the mirror, similar to someone who's struggling with anorexia, they look in the mirror and they think, oh, I can just get a little bit thinner. And when it comes to our wealth and we look at what we have, we always think, I'd be just a little bit better off if I had a little bit more. Or maybe it's a lot more. The richer we've become over the last 200 years, our priorities really have shifted from what we need to what we want. And we no longer recognize that we are rich. For us in Canada and in the West, we actually live in the richest time in history. Even though it's interesting, when you turn on the news, if you look at YouTube clips and stuff, we see all sorts of things. We experience incredibly high inflation today. Housing is more expensive than it's ever been. Our dollar isn't going as far as we're used to it going. And if you have conversations with people on the street, this is the topic that comes up. When have you not had a conversation about how expensive things are right now? I mean, it's just like, it's almost like more regular than talking about the weather. We talk about this. And yet the reality is that we still live in the richest time in history. Do you know that the average salary, when I looked at and researched this, the average salary in BC, they say is about $53,000 a year for one person. The average global personal income, though, is $9,700. So our average is $53,000. The average global is $9,700. And so what, in terms of how you view rich is kind of what your perception is in terms of what you're comparing yourself to, right? In regards to the global economy, for us in Canada, even though we're struggling with the cost of living, we're still incredibly wealthy. Canada is in the top 10 worldwide of average household income. So when you look at the top 10 countries in the world, we are still in the top 10 of global household income. So I put this little graph on the board there. This is the distribution of global wealth. So if you make less than $10,000 a year, you make up 53% of the global population. Isn't that mind-blowing to think about? That over 50% of everybody on the world, their household income is $10,000 or less. It puts our situation into perspective, doesn't it? If you look at this as well, the light blue shows this, that if you make between $10,000 and $100,000, that's a huge swath of money, that makes up another 33.8%. So I think potentially a lot of Canadians fit in that. You're somewhere between $10,000 and $100,000. Now, if you're, as a household income, if you're making over $100,000, maybe there's two of you that are working, you have dual incomes, and you may be making over $100,000, now you're in the top 10, 12% of the world. So this is the distribution of global wealth. If you have enough food in your cupboard and your fridge to cover you for the week and beyond, you are rich. I want you to think about what's in your cupboard. You are rich. If you have more clothes than you know what to do with, and you're still shopping for more, you know, as you are bundling up your clothes to take to, like, the thrift store, and at the same time you're shopping for more clothes, you are rich. You're rich. If you have the ability to stop by Starbucks or Tim Hortons for a coffee multiple times a week, you are rich. If you have more stuff in your house than you know what to do with, and you're thinking about how to do a garage sale or sell it on Facebook Marketplace or whatever it is, you are rich. You are doing well. If you have money left over outside of your basic necessities, like food and clothing and shelter and things like that, if you have money outside of that, you are rich. Now, I'm not putting this all up there and talking about this to make you feel guilty. You don't have to feel guilty. You don't have to feel guilty about being Canadian. You don't have to feel guilty about being raised in this country. You don't have to feel guilty about having a good wage. What I want you to grab out of this is sense the blessing in that. There's a blessing in that. And sometimes we get so caught up in being like, man, things are so expensive, this, that, and the other. We see the inflation that's happening. We see what's going on in cost of housing, different things like that, that we lose focus and recognize the blessings of God in our lives, how much we've been given. And it's good. This is just a bit of a reality check. There was a Gallup poll that was done several years ago, and a Gallup poll means they're interviewing all sorts of people, doing a survey. And in the survey, they're asking people what they would consider to be rich. For each person that they interviewed, the average was whatever was double of what they made, they considered to be rich. So if someone made $50,000 a year, they'd be like, someone who makes $100,000 a year is rich. If they made $60,000, it was $120,000. If they made $120,000, it was $240,000. It was really interesting. Rich is a moving target. No matter how much you have, you just never have enough. This is part of the human condition. There was a 19th century philosopher, his name was Arthur Schopenhauer. And he said this, he says, wealth is like seawater. The more we drink, the thirstier we become. Isn't that true? I mean, if you've drank seawater, you know, it's not quenching your thirst. You're wanting more, right? And that's what wealth does to us. We're all in that boat. And you know what? Rich people aren't always good at staying rich. We're not good at staying rich. It's interesting, when they study, you know, a lot of parents, like we live in Canada, so it's like we put our kids in hockey, we're hoping that they're going to make it to the NHL or whatever it is. We're hoping to hit the lottery ticket in that regard. And the studies show, like if for NFL players, I don't have the stats for NHL players, maybe they do better, but for NFL players, the stats show that 78% of NFL players, once they retire, within 5 years, they're either bankrupt or they're financially stressed. 78%. Can you imagine that? The amount of money they're making. NBA players, it's 60%. Of all the millions they make, within 5 years, they're broke. I mean, we don't know how to stay rich. They've done studies on people who win the lottery. Have you ever wished that you win the lottery? Oh, come on. You buy that ticket. And you're looking at those numbers and you're thinking how it's going to change your life. When they study lottery winners, they realize that 50% of lottery winners within 5 years, they've spent it all. There's something about 5 years. What's it about 5 years? That's crazy, right? Oftentimes we think about being generous. We believe that we could give away more money if we just had more. We believe that I'll be generous just when I have more. But being more wealthy, being more rich, doesn't necessarily mean you give away more, right? There's a story in the Bible where Jesus and his disciples are sitting at the temple and people are walking by and they're putting their money in the offering box. And there's rich people that are coming by and they're putting offering in. And the disciples are like, oh, look how much money that is, or look how much money that is. And in the story, a little old widow walks by and she puts in like one coin. And Jesus is like, she gave way more because she gave everything that she had. It was a little old lady that was more generous than the rich people. And sometimes life is like that. There's this company called the Fraser Institute that studies generosity in Canada. I'm going to show you guys a couple of shocking numbers. In 2023, residents of British Columbia donated 0.73% of their aggregate income. It's kind of like gross income. So when they look at everybody who lives in BC and all the money that they make, the gross amount of money that they make, we give 0.73% of our aggregate income to charity. Guys, that's not even 1%. It's actually really embarrassing. It's pretty embarrassing, actually. Now, obviously, that equals itself out in terms of some people are giving away, you know, 5, 10, 15%. They're giving away a lot, but that just shows there's a lot of people in our province that don't give anything, right? And so we're giving away, like, I think as Canadians, we like to see ourselves as generous. We're like, we're Canadians, we're generous. I actually think we're fooling ourselves. Let me give you this other stat. 17% of people who file taxes in BC give to charity. So what that means, so if you don't know, this is how giving to charity works. So if you donate money, whether it's to a church, maybe it's United Way, maybe it's the mustard seed in town, whatever it is, if it's a registered charity and they have your name and they have your information, at the end of the tax year, they're going to send you a receipt. And then when you're doing your income taxes, you take that receipt and you do it as part of your income tax return. And the reason why you do that is because you're going to get a certain percentage of money back from the government that you'd already given them. But it's a tax return, right? So from what I understand, like in BC, if you give over $200 in a year, you're going to get about 50% back. Okay? So if you give $2,000 away to charity, you're going to get $1,000 of your income tax back. I could be wrong on that, but that's what I read. So you think about that, only 17% of people in our province do this, like they have even one receipt. We're not very good at this. So this is what I say. For us in BC and Canada, we are like that person suffering from anorexia. No matter how much we have, it's not enough. We feel that we just need more. And giving generously is difficult for us because we feel we just don't have enough. We're looking in our financial mirror and we're like, I would give, but I just don't have enough for myself. I think the scriptures would tell us, I think God would speak into our lives and he would say, you will never have enough if you start with that. So Proverbs chapter 11, verse 24 to 25 says this. One person gives freely, yet gains even more. Another person withholds unduly, but comes to poverty. A generous person will prosper. Whoever refreshes others will be refreshed. Here's some words of wisdom for us. This is written thousands of years ago, but it's still relevant for us today. If you are a person who gives freely, you are going to gain even more. What does that look like? I don't know. Does it mean that you're going to gain financially? Maybe, maybe not. Maybe as you give generously, God wants to bless you in other ways. Whatever that gain looks like, that's up to God. So when you give generously, you're not keeping track. It's not like you're keeping score and saying, God, like, I've given more than you've given back. No, you give it away and you trust God, knowing that the gain is going to be so much greater than you ever give away. But when you withhold, when you hold on to what you have really, really tightly, you become an impoverished person, whether that's financially or in other areas of your life. A generous person will prosper. I believe this is a promise from God. And when I look throughout my life, when I have seen generous people, there's certain people in my life that have that gift of giving. We're all called to give. I've been talking about spiritual gifts, but some people have that spiritual gift. You know who they are. And when I've met those people who have the gift of generosity, they prosper. It's like God pours out his blessings on them in more ways than just financially. He just blesses them. They've learned something from God. That is who God is. God is a generous God. I talked earlier about being an image bearer of Jesus. If you are an image bearer of God, as we get closer to bearing his image, we become generous people. Because that's who God is. He's just generous. So the cost of living is going up. Everything's getting more expensive, but this is the thing that's interesting. Did you know that when you talk to economists today, they're saying that we are on the cusp of seeing the largest wealth transfer in the history of the world in the next 20 years? In the next 20 years, between now and 2045, we're going to see the largest wealth transfer the world has ever seen. The question is going to be, what are we going to do with that wealth? Can you put that thing up there? They're saying that we're going to see a wealth transfer of about $85 trillion in the next 20 years. And so they look at the generations. This graph is showing, this is an estimate of who is going to be receiving this generational wealth. If you are in Gen X, yeah, you're like, sweet, I have like the largest piece of the pie. So that means you were born between 65 and 80. I fit within that category. If you're a millennial, I mean, there's $30 trillion that's going to go to Gen X sometime in the next 20 years. If you're a millennial, there's $27 trillion that's going to pass on to you. If you're Gen Z, there's going to be about $11 trillion that's going to pass on to you in the next 20 years. That's honestly, most of this generational wealth is being transferred on from the baby boomers. And so we're looking at cost of housing, we're looking at how expensive things are, but the reality is that this is coming. This is coming. Are we going to be a people that are generous? You know, when I look at scripture, it says, God so loved the world that he gave his only son. God was so generous, he gave his only son. He calls us to be generous. What are we going to do with this wealth transfer? That is going to be interesting. You know, when it comes to generosity and wealth and how to deal with this stuff, I think the Bible is still a great place to go to. The Apostle Paul wrote many letters in the New Testament. And there's a couple letters that he wrote to a young pastor. His name was Timothy. Timothy was a young man. He was pastoring a church in a city called Ephesus a couple thousand years ago. Now, Ephesus was an interesting city. It was a port city on the Mediterranean. It was one of the largest cities of the world 2,000 years ago. It was a city that wealth flowed through Ephesus. The people in Ephesus were rich. In fact, if you go and visit Ephesus today, which you can walk through the streets because it was abandoned a long time ago. You can see the wealth that was there. The people there were rich. And yet there was a church there. People had come to follow Jesus. Many of the people who came to follow Jesus had money. And so the question with these people who were wealthy that were following Jesus is that, what are they going to do with that? How are they going to deal with that? Paul had some really godly advice to give to Timothy, and I want to read a little bit of that to you today. In 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 6 to 10, and then we're going to read 17 and 19, it says this, "Yet true godliness with contentment is great wealth." I just want to pause there. What is true wealth, you guys? It's not going to be the largeness of your bank account. Paul's touching on something that's really, really important. Godliness, who you are as a person, your character, how you live out your life, and then being content with what God gives you. He's like, that's going to be true wealth. Can we be people of contentment? That is true wealth. He continues and he says, "After all, we brought nothing with us when we came into the world, and we can't take anything with us when we leave it. So if we have enough food and clothing, let us be content." Right? You brought nothing into this world, and you can like earn all the money in the world, and then you're going to die one day, and you're not going to be able to bring it with you to heaven. So with the wealth that God gives you here and now, don't hold on to it tightly. Ask yourself, what is it that God wants me to do with this? And then he says, if you have enough food and clothing, let us be content. I mean, he's looking at the very basics. Do you know in the ancient world, when you talk about clothing, right? Like we live in a world of like, we just like wear clothes, throw them away, wear them, throw away. In the ancient world, the average person really only had one, maybe two sets of clothing. That was it. So like I'm wearing a shirt today. In the ancient world, I was doing well if I had one more shirt. And you'd swap them in and out, right? You'd wash one, wear the other, and that's all you had. I mean, if you had three shirts, you were rich. That was the ancient world. Now, I want you to think about your closets today. I mean, it's almost hilarious. And Paul's like, man, if you have enough food, if you have some clothing on your back, he's like, be content. And then he continues in verse 9. He says, "But people who long to be rich fall in temptation, are trapped by many foolish and harmful desires that plunge them into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil, and some people craving money have wandered from the true faith and pierced themselves with many sorrows." There's a lot of wisdom here for us today. Money is not evil. Money's not evil. You're going to come across money. It's not evil. But he points out this thing is like, what are you pursuing? What are you pursuing? When we read this, I think oftentimes we go, well, I'm not the one who loves money. And we always look to somebody else like that person is like that, but it's not me. But I think if we're all realistic with where we're at in the 21st century here as Canadians, I think we all struggle with this. We struggle with it. Some people craving money have wandered from the true faith and pierced themselves with many sorrows. I think that this is more true today than ever before. The amount of conversations I've had with people, and we all experience this in our lives as we raise children and people have grown up in church, and something along their path has derailed their faith and they've walked away from church, they've walked away from faith. And one of the things that I look to is I think that there's something about the richness of our culture today that draws us away from God. Our faith and our trust and our desire is more for things and what the world has to offer and not ourselves. And we're always surprised when we look at third world countries, countries that are more in that 50% that make maybe only $10,000 a year or less, how much faith is such a big part of their lives. Whether you're in poor parts of Asia, Africa, or whatever, how faith is so cornerstone to how they live. They're not relying upon their money. Their money is not their God. They're not worshiping that. They know how delicate their lives are. They know that one day they can have food and the next day it can be gone. They know that one day they have a house, the next day it can be gone. They know how delicate life is, but yet they put their faith in God. For us in the West, we trust in our wealth. We trust in it. We put our faith in it. It has become our God. It's an idol. In verse 17, it says this, command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant, nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put your hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. Don't be arrogant. There's something about wealth that makes us arrogant. There's something about being able to step out of an expensive car that everybody likes that like puffs us up. There's something about having the big house on the hill that everybody looks at and goes, ooh, wow, what a nice hill. There's something about our wealth that gives us arrogance. I was listening to the radio a couple weeks ago. I don't know which station it was, but it was a radio station here in town. And they're asking people, do you treat others that have more money than you? Do you treat others that are wealthy different than others who don't? And they're getting calls on the radio and everybody was like, they 100% did. They treated people with money differently. They viewed them differently. They gave them more respect. In fact, if you had money, they listened to you more closely. Your opinion was more valuable if you had wealth. There's an arrogance that builds up in our heart with wealth. And we put our hope in that. But it's so uncertain. It's so uncertain. We try and invest in things that have certainty to it, whether it's real estate, whether it's certain stocks that we're like, oh, this is a real certain stock. Like it, if I watch it, it just continues to go up. And we put our hope and our faith in those things, and it could be gone. The snap of a finger. And all of that is wiped away. And there's this wisdom in here. Do not put your hope in those things. Put your hope in God because he is going to richly provide for you. And you know what else? It says, and everything for your enjoyment. Everything for your enjoyment. God is not a stingy God. He's not like, I'm just going to give you just enough, just so you're just surviving, just so your life is so hard. Paul's like, no, he's going to give you everything you need and everything for your enjoyment. What do you need in life to have an enjoyable life? Sometimes we fool ourselves. We're like, if I had this toy, if I had that toy. Do you know that when they look at people who have more toys, they're actually more stressed out? trying to upkeep their stuff. So what is the solution to the problem of money? Paul continues. He says this. Tell them to use their money to do good. They should be rich in good works and generous to those in need, always being ready to share with others. By doing this, they'll be storing up their treasure as a good foundation for the future so that they may experience true life. Paul's giving advice to rich people here. He is. The Ephesians were rich. In fact, I've toured through Ephesus, and there are these areas of Ephesus that like are mind-boggling how they lived. Like you can see down into their houses as they've excavated their houses, and they have these amazing like mosaics, tile mosaics that they did on the floors of their houses that today you'd be like, oh my goodness, that would cost thousands and thousands of dollars. So these people were rich. And Paul's like, they have a lot of money. What are you going to do with it? Do good with it. Find ways to be generous. Make plans of being generous. Because by being generous with your money, by being free with your money, you're going to be storing up treasure. Where? Not in the bank. Not in your safe at home. Wherever you store up your treasure. You're storing up a treasure, a good foundation for a future so that you will experience true life. The life beyond this life. You're going to live for 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 years, and what you do on this life spills over into the next. But not just that, on this life that you're living right here and now, when you set that foundation of generosity, when you're blessing people with what you have, you are also going to experience true life now. Now, Jesus isn't just worried about the life in the life to come once you die, but he's saying you're going to experience true life now. Oftentimes we struggle because we feel we don't have enough, but the reality is that we put our money where we value things. The things that we value, we put money towards. So what do you value? I would encourage you, if you are kind of in the place where you're like, man, where do I start? How do I go about doing this? Do I just walk around the street looking for places to put my money or doing this or that or whatever? The one thing I would encourage you is put it a part of your budget. Put a part of your budget every month. You're like, I'm going to give this percent and it's going to be given away. And you budgeted a part of your monthly budget. Catherine and I, in our family, we've been doing that for years. When we made little and we've made more, we've always budgeted that. For us, we look into the Bible and we look for wisdom to that. And I'm not going to go into great detail, but when we look at the Old Testament, God commanded the people of Israel to give 10% of everything that they made to the temple. But God didn't stop there. He's like, and I also want you to be generous to poor people. I want you to be generous here, there, and wherever. And so for Catherine and I, for us, it's like from the moment we started making money and when we got married, we would just set aside at least 10% of what we made to give back to God. So this is yours, God. And you know what? If you make that step and you do things like that, eventually you don't even recognize it. You're not missing it. You're saying this is God's and you just give it away. And then outside of that, it's like we're looking at, we give away to other aspects as well in terms of missions and the mustard seed and different things like that in terms of trying to be generous. And when I say that, I'm not telling you that to make myself feel better, okay? Or to build myself up. I don't want you to make that mistake. The reason why I'm telling you this is I want you to know I'm not just preaching this and not wanting to live it out. For me, we do this, but I know in my heart that we can give more. I know personally, it's like, even though I do this, it's just the tip of the iceberg. It's not, I'm like able to look at God and say, hey, God, look at me. Look how generous I am. For how rich we are, 10% is like, no. But you start somewhere. Maybe you're a person, you're like, man, that sounds like way too much. Maybe you start with like 1% and you're like, hey, I did this. And the next month you go to 2% or whatever. But you have to choose in your heart. You're saying, God, you blessed me. Allow me to be a blessing to others. This is your money, it's not mine. I'm not going to hold on to it tightly, but I'm going to give it away. I'm going to stop there. This is just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to the subject. We might touch on other aspects because, you know, Jesus talked about wealth. He talked about money a lot. This is just one little scripture.